Hello, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Good. Okay. Well, this is a good approach because I wish we could edit the recordings, but we can't. So
yeah, I know.
But this way, we'll allow as people come on, we'll be able to get their names. So
that sounds.
And perhaps you could welcome them and have them tell us who they are and when they come on.
Yep. I can do that. Sometimes it's hard to get names and stuff, though.
It is. It is.
We'll just do the best we can.
Well, for purposes of recording, for anyone who's listening to this recording, we record the professional learning community calls for people who may have missed them.
Hi, who's there today?
This is Tim Bull, St. Louis Community College, Brownfield Job Training Program.
Hey, Tim, how are you?
Good, and yourself?
Good. This is Glow. I saw your registration come in for the grantee meeting. Great. Very good.
Yeah, I've got my airline reservations taken care of, and I'll be booked in the hotel this week.
Okay. Wonderful.
Tim, this is Mike. That's a great idea because it'll start filling up fast. And
yeah, I don't like waiting to the last minute.
That's right. This is a great meeting. We're going to have all the EPA people, and we're going to have, as we've had in the past, the general counsel from EPA, who's going to talk to us about grantsmanships and things we can do and can't do. He's really good. And
that's what I was going to ask you, is what can I kind of expect?
It'll be
are there like small breakout sessions, big
yeah.
sessions, what?
Breakout sessions primarily.
Okay.
Hey, Tim, maybe it would be helpful if I could, I'll email you the agenda from last year.
Okay.
And it'll
yeah,
be kind of similar to that, as just like when you registered and you gave me some topics that you wanted to talk about, that's what I build the agenda on.
Okay.
It's all mostly small group sessions, except for the session that Mike just talked about is a large group. We also have ACRES, SRA is coming in to do training on the ACRES reporting system during lunch. And we're trying to get together a panel of contractors that'll be facilitated by EPA headquarters at the end of the day on Tuesday to talk about job placement.
Okay.
So it's I'll just send you that as kind of an example of.
Okay. Yeah, because I know here in St. Louis, I mean, I talk to different contractors and different employers, and you know, they give me ideas of things that they look for in job, you know, job trainees, but most of them are hiring.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of a double-edged
hard.
Sword. Yeah, especially when, you know, the program is bringing people in, training them, but they don't have any experience.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's a tough thing, and we're going to talk about that today, is the whole issue of certifications, which is one of the few things that the program has over people off the streets. Besides training, if they could come on with into certifications.
Right.
Hey, who just joined us, please?
Rebecca Roscoe, Cochise College.
Ah, hi, Rebecca. How are you? This is Glow.
Hi, Glow. Fine.
Hi, Rebecca. We've been getting your emails, and it's great that you're interested in Rebecca's anticipating submitting a Brownfields application, as I understand.
Yeah.
Hi, who just joined us?
Pete Kelly, City of Gallup.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Pete.
Well, thanks for having me.
Great. Peter, this is Mike, and we've got Rebecca with Cochise College and Tim with St. Louis Community College on the line. We'll have some more people joining us. We were just, before people get on, we were just talking in general about the tough job market, and that one thing that these programs have to offer are some certifications that do take a while to get, and once your participants have those certifications, it gives them a little bit of an edge over someone who's on the bench in a union state or whatever who may not have the certs. And but it is a difficult time right now. Being down in Gallup, you've got a closer proximity to the oil spill, I imagine.
Well, oh no, we're a ways from the Gulf, although. We do have lots of brownfields in town. As a matter of fact, our local council of governments, or regional council, was recently awarded a $1 million EPA assessment grant and the city has several properties, much to my consternation, that I'm sure will qualify as brownfields.
Right.
I've paid for phase ones on several out of my own budget, and a couple came back clean, a couple came back dirty. There are countless other sites in town, leaking USTs, former dry cleaners, you name it. We've got a massive uranium spill. We're on the second largest vein of uranium in the nation. And we're still suffering the after effects of uranium mining that occurred some 20 years ago or thereabouts, 30 years ago now.
Isn't that amazing? And are you anticipating a job training proposal?
Yes, we're hoping that we can extract awards from EPA for all three phases. We've gotten the assessment grant. I'm partnering with the local community college on the Brownfields job training grant, and then obviously once we identify the Brownfields and have the workforce necessary to do the abatement, we'll apply to EPA for cleanup money.
Hi, a couple people just joined us. Do you want to give us your names, please?
Sure. This is Catherine Newman from the city of Barham.
Okay. Hi, Catherine. Thank you for joining us. And who else joined us?
This is Paula Paris from JFY Networks in Boston.
Great. Hi, Paula.
Hello.
Good to see you, Paula.
Hello. Sorry, I've been kind of MIA for the last couple of weeks.
That's okay. This is going to be a good session. We need you, Paula, because we're going to talk about certifications and we're going to talk about the value added to students. And we've got some potentially new Brownfield grantees that are going to be submitting proposals. And,
excellent.
We were just talking to Peter about Gallup, and they got an assessment grant. They're going to be submitting a job training grant and then hopefully a cleanup grant. So they're going to do the triple play here, which is...
Oh, that's great. That's a good one.
It is. And in the previous sessions, what we've been doing is pretty much following through from beginning to end all of the components of a Brownfields job development grant, what you need to do.
Hi, who joined us, please?
Warren Adams-Levitt from Kansas City OAI.
Oh, great. Hi, Warren.
Hello.
Hey, Warren. We're talking about certifications today, and what we've done in the past is we kind of track from the beginning of definition of the program to defining your target group, and you're doing your labor market assessment, and then now we're going to be starting to look at how we develop this program and what kind of program we develop. For those of you who are on previous calls, of course, we emphasize so much on this labor market assessment of what's needed in your community before you start training people. If you're going to be training for lead, you need to have lead old buildings in your community, or if you're asbestos, you need asbestos, or if you're in an area where there's a lot of weatherization activities, you know, you need to find out exactly what's happening. We've had grantees who have focused on very, very narrow areas, and that was fine because they determined early on there was a huge need for a very narrow segment of people with specific training, and they were able to train to that and place all those people. And then as their programs matured, they branched out into other fields as they saw the need. This is a little like a community college that they determine the need of the community, and then they train to fill that need. We really like the idea of find out what they need and then build it, rather than build it and then push the people out. The university model tends to be, we're going to train these people, we're going to decide the curriculum, they're going to go out, and the industry's going to take what we give them. We work on an opposite model of we go back to industry. Going back to what Tim said originally, sitting down with people in the community, finding out what they really need, and then training to those needs. Because the difference between us and universities, we're trying to put people in jobs immediately. So we're trying to fill demands. What's happening to the Brownfields job training program is it's expanding very dramatically. And with this new administration, we went from an old approach. Brownfields used to be you had an assessment pilot. Someone was awarded money to do assessment, and there was a training associated with that, and there was money for that training, but it was very limited training that included environmental courses that would fill the needs of that very specific brownfields. And these tended to be courses in bioremediation, types of cleanups training, types of sampling and analysis training, phase one training, assisting phase two training, mold, radon, lead, asbestos, the traditional environmental courses. But what happened about a year ago is we've seen this branching out and this emphasis on green jobs. And, of course, we've been doing green jobs in brownfields since the beginning, but the EPA was pretty much given the go-ahead to expand this training to include environmental and energy jobs in brownfield communities. And the stretch coming to the point where they're saying, if we're going to have a brownfields and we're going to redevelop that brownfields, we could look at these green jobs, which opens up a whole new area of weatherization, weatherization inspection and installation, that whole green job area. And so what we're facing now is the old traditional brownfields job training, which is the environmental courses, but then we've got a whole list of other courses. And, of course, some of those courses include health and safety. You know, you've got kind of two kinds of training. You've got the training that helps someone do their job correctly. That's the technical training of how you do sampling or how you might remove something or how you might build something. So you've got your hands-on how do you do a training, but then you've got a lot of training, and most of the certifications that exist now have to do with protecting the worker because we're dealing with some very potentially harmful things. And what happens often, more often than not, in the case of 9/11 and now in the case of the Gulf, people are swarming in to help and may not be properly trained, and in the process they're harming themselves. So when OSHA and NIHS came into this whole area, there's been this big push, and it's really the majority of certifications are based on protection of worker, and then added to that the technical. So we've got a blurred type of certification and training program. We've got the training that how to do it, and then the training of how to protect yourself while you're doing it, and then the certification, which certifies that you've had that training that shows you how to protect yourself. So it's become kind of blurred. And as a result, we've got many agencies issuing these certifications. We've got the EPA issuing certifications. We've got OSHA, which is responsible for most of the health and safety certifications. We've got energy certifications that are now being held actually by nonprofit private, BP, we'll talk about later, BPI, the Building Performance Institute. And then we've got DOT that are issuing certifications. And so we've got all these different agencies, and we've got, of course, ASTM, which is the American Society of Testing Materials, that they don't necessarily certify, they have procedures of how to do things. So when we're talking about setting up a job training program, we're confronted when we develop our curriculum with all of these myriads of certifications and types of training, and we have to kind of decide which direction we're going to go in. You know, are we going to give them certifications in all of these things, or are we going to limit the number of certifications? And in a minute, I'd like to have everyone talk about some of the things that they think they're going to that they're either certifying or planning on certifying, or how their curriculum looks. But we've got this broad area of certifications, and the other interesting thing is, what constitutes a certification?
Hi, did someone just join us?
Yes, I did. Sorry, I'm late.
That's okay. Who am I talking to?
My name's Heather Smith.
Oh, great. Heather, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
That's okay. We're just going to carry on from where we left off.
Okay, thanks.
Heather, we're talking about certifications and how this is a very broad area. And some are pretty specific, and we can talk with the granddaddy of all certifications that have to do with brownfields. It's the OSHA 40-hour HAZWOPR, we call it, has this waste site worker training. Actually, if you go for a brownfields grant, everyone has to have 40-hour OSHA training. And when you think about 9/11 or you think about the Gulf spill, 40-hour is what everyone's looking for. When you looked at the hurricane, when it hit New Orleans, they were looking for people with 40-hour training, because whenever you're going to be dealing with hazardous materials, you have to have the 40-hour OSHA training. So this is the granddaddy and mandatory course of everything. Now, interestingly enough, we're talking about an EPA program, but this is actually administered by OSHA, Occupational Health and Safety Administration. There are many programs out there that teach it, but it's a certification that has very specific standards in terms of who trains, how they're trained, and how the certification is issued. And there are some private trainers like Compliance Solutions and things, and they'll certify kind of in the private sector a person for about $500, $525 for a 40-hour HAZWOPR course. That also requires a refresher, an 8-hour refresher, and they charge about $125. So this is just for one certification. And while that's the biggest certification of all of them, it's the most expensive. But you can, as we start building these certifications, you can see the value of your students. If you can offer them these certifications, how valuable they are to someone who needs someone now who's certified. Other certifications besides the OSHA HAZWOPR and the 8-hour refresher, there's a whole list of them. Many of them have to do with health and safety in the construction workplace, but they're also applicable to the environmental workplace. Things like confined space, whenever someone's going into a tank or into a hole, or even if they're doing weatherization work and they're going into a confined space, they need the confined space training. Laddering, if they're beginning climbing, respiratory protection. There are other things like general construction. We mentioned laddering. There's a whole list of them, and you can go. The best resource for OSHA certifications is your local OSHA office, and they'll tell you the certified trainers. They're very helpful, and you can Google them and find out who the local OSHA representatives are. And I would say, in addition to the 40-hour course, you may decide as you develop your curriculum what other OSHA courses and certifications you want to provide. Many of them also provide first aid and CPR is just an add-on course that is always good to have on any work site. And so when we talk about these OSHA courses, we're talking about things to do when people are out working in the field, whether it's environmental or whether it's energy related. The DOT courses often are taught basically the CLC, the commercial driver's license. A lot of our programs will offer, again, like first aid, they'll give their students a commercial driver's license, which again helps them get jobs, and it's a nice license to have, is to get a commercial driver's license. So many of the programs will throw that in to make their students more marketable, because they'll be driving a truck or whatever. They might be, if it's involved in transportation of hazardous materials, they might get a DOT transportation hazardous materials type of cert. Of course, there's also forklift operators. If they're working on construction sites, you might be providing forklift operators training. And that's another add-on that makes them like the commercial driver's license and makes them quite valuable. If you're working in an environment, they say, who's got forklift training, you know, and if they do, they're in line for it. So those DOT and OSHA courses, while they're not showing you so much how to do the work, they're showing you how to protect yourself and allowing you to drive trucks and administer first aid. When we get to the environmental and the energy courses, the EPA training is basically the mold, the radon, the asbestos, and the lead. The most significant, many of these are issued through states, and you have to work from your state up on asbestos, radon, mold, and lead, often through the Department of Health or the DNR. EPA recently, and we're going to probably have a separate session on the lead regulation, RRMP, which is renovation and repair. This is a course specifically designed in as lead remediation. EPA has traditionally taken the lead in remediation of lead, and this last year they instituted a very specific set of regulations, and we could have some of the people online talk about that, and we'll talk about that later. Asbestos, radon, and mold, often these depend on state regulations, and if you're training locally and you want to train someone to remediate one of these pollutants, you may want to check with the state, DNR, or health department. They're either handled, if they're not handled by the local environmental agency, they're handled by the health department or perhaps the OSHA. It depends on the state. And then when we get to the energy area, if your program is going to be doing energy-related training, which is new in this last year, this is a field that is rapidly changing. And I think, and Paula could probably speak to some of the work they're doing, and also Tim and Warren. But BPI took an early lead in this, the Building Performance Institute, and they've had states that have mandated BPI certification for its staff. New York, New Jersey, Ohio, Indiana, and Washington, I believe, are requiring BPI certification for weatherization. They're in the process of having the installer cert also administered. This has not been issued by the federal government hasn't taken an active role in this, but a lot of the states have. And my feeling, I guess, and we can talk to everyone about this, is that the weatherization certification is going to be handled more on a state level. And I think what you may have to do is find out what requirements are in your state and approach it that way. How do the rest of you feel in terms of what your certifications are? Paula, do you want to start out by telling us a little bit about your program and the certifications you're offering?
Sure. The ones that we're offering are obviously the HAZWOPA. This year we did RRP, and for our next 2 years of funding, we'll be focusing also on RRP. We do confined space, 10-hour OSHA construction safety, and asbestos and mold. I think that's it. I should have them all in front of me, but I don't. I think two things about that. One is that one of our training partners is also Akash, Occupational Health and Safety. They're a trainer, and they're also funded by NIEHS. That's the New England Consortium. So they're enormously helpful. They're also our training partner. They offer those courses and also some guidance about what's needed. It's interesting that on the energy side, because this year we've just finished our first cycle of a weatherization training, and there's lots and lots of discussion going on at the state level about what the certifications can and should be. And I think I sent you all a few months back an article from our local Boston paper about the hoopla I think it was also in April when it was about to become official, and you know, there's some pushback from the Weatherization Assistance Program, the WAP program, which I think those are the local entities. Ours is through the State Housing Department. There are the folks that have gotten a lot of the residential weatherization money. And they have not previously had very high or consistent standards for the contractors who do the work, who they have in their large contractor pool. So people are pushing back on that because the state wants to have certain things mandated, including Davis-Bacon wages, and there's a lot of energy around, and nothing is settled. But we're preparing people with, you know, we've incorporated the RRP because our other training partner, Institute for Environmental Education, was an early adopter of one of those, and it also hired one of our graduates who also speaks Spanish. So he he is one of the RRP trainers. And he also gives the course in Spanish. So we're really fortunate in that regard. I have just in front of me we're in our job placement phase also for our Brownfields program. And we've been approached by a company that's a national environmental services company, who also uses an oil spill, state-of-the-art oil spill identification program, and they have made one offer has been accepted, and that graduate is going to the Gulf. But I have a job description that's actually, interestingly enough, posted on LinkedIn, and I wanted to read you what the qualifications are. Other than sort of the teamwork stuff, which is the soft skills, and I think there's a separate discussion about soft skills and how that gets funded, but ability to work independently, previous experience, 1 or 2 years experience conducting field work is preferable, first aid, which we also added this year. Our trainer is certified now to do first aid and CPR. And prior HAZWOP training, either initial 24 or 40 hours, is a plus. And that was kind of the first thing that they focused on for coming to us and hiring, making offers to hire graduates, was the fact that they had the HAZWOP. So that tells us two things. It tells us that the HAZWOP is an important employability credential, and also it tells us that this is an employer that we want to talk to because we don't actually want to deal with employers who are not who don't have worker health and safety as a priority. So,
now Catherine? What are you doing in Durham in terms of your certifications?
Well, in Durham, we just are finishing up literally this month our 2008 program, and we got money to start again in 2010. So our base program is a 40-hour HAZWOP, 32-hour asbestos, I think it's 16-hour lead worker initial, 10-hour OSHA, a first aid and CPR certification, and then we're wanting to add in some green certifications, but we haven't decided which ones yet. I think my plan is to do some kind of labor market assessment. I've been working with some businesses on the job placement side of things, but I'm going to be reaching out to them with some kind of form that they can fill out where I'm going to list all of the potential green certifications and really have them rank which ones would be most beneficial for them, and I'll probably have them do the same thing for our existing program, just to see if maybe we don't need all of those certifications or some are more important than others. Vapor air intrusion has come up a few times before, so that's one that we're going to heavily consider. And we also, another city department has a big weatherization program So that's a big initiative in Durham. So it's a potential. I don't know what certification we can get with weatherization, but or if that's even possible, but that's something that we're definitely going to consider.
What about how about down in St. Louis, Tim?
Ours is a six-week program, and the students will get a license in lead and asbestos abatement from Missouri and Illinois, and then they'll also receive certifications for OSHA 10-hour safety and health for construction, the 40-hour HAZWOPER, 40-hour weatherization, first aid CPR, the RRP, and then there's also ecosystem restoration, environmental technologies, and mold remediation. And then once the students graduate, because I'm housed at one of the career centers, then we can take advantage of some of the things that are offered here, and then we bring them in for, to help them with resumes and with, general life skills and networking and interviewing and just, the overall job search itself to make sure that they're, they can do the basic things that aren't going to win them the job, but will definitely lose them the job if they walk in the door, not dressed properly with the right tools in hand.
Anyone else in terms of the certs that you're providing?
I have a question. I'll respond to that first, though. We have two programs, remediation program and a weatherization program under the grant. And the remediation is a packet of remediation certifications starting with HAZWOPER, asbestos supervisor. It has been lead supervisor. Now it's going to be lead RRP, a first aid CPR, 10-hour OSHA construction safety. I'm not sure if I've left anything out. And then kind of a packet of soft skills training that goes with that. Environmental justice, kind of a talk from our local, our regional EPA rep. The weatherization focuses on BPI weatherization certification, and it's almost 2 weeks long. So I was curious to hear in St. Louis that you're doing a 40-hour weatherization. This one is a Building Performance Institute certification. We still do 40-hour HAZWOPER. Asbestos awareness and lead RRP and 10-hour OSHA and first aid CPR. My question, though, or my concern, the Kansas City Weatherization Office, which is the largest buyer of weatherization services or potential source for work, has a rule that they won't do business with people with felony convictions, or you can't even have someone with a felony on your crew, because since they're working in people's homes while they're living there, it's just a liability that the city doesn't want.
Mm-hmm.
That's the trouble. Is that's real problematic in the inner city in Kansas City, where you have so many people that are under supervision of the court or have old felonies that. And the other trouble is that we felt that we had to respond to that in terms of our criteria for the job training program, in not allowing people with felonies into the program because they wouldn't be able to get much work coming out of the program. And we're getting beat up about that at the moment. And so, anyway, I'm just curious if other cities, if it's common to have a rule excluding felons from participation in the LIHEAP programs or the other kind of city or state-run weatherization programs?
I don't know about the weatherization piece, but the city of Durham, we had 60% ex-offenders in our 2008 program. That actually did not end up being a barrier to employment. As much as we had expected it was going to be. We did not take in anyone who's admitted to a violent crime. So it was pretty minor offenses, mostly drug related. But then there were some, I think, larceny things like that. The bigger issue for us was people who didn't have driver's licenses as a major barrier to employment. But yeah, the ex-offender thing wasn't actually a big deal.
Now, did your students go to work in environmental areas?
Yes, they did.
Okay, so they were more.
Yeah, it has been a barrier for us in terms of remediation fields, but the home weatherization is a particularly sensitive because you're working in people's homes.
What do you do up there in Boston, Paula? Have you got ex-offenders in your program?
Well, yes, we do. And it's been interesting. It depends. Right now, it's depending on the contractor, because I don't know if there are any hard and fast rules per se, but there is a preference for the large contractors do exclude. They're very explicit about criminal records, and they do not feel that they can afford to take people. So far, I mean, it's only occasionally a barrier with our on the remediation side of things. We're just in job placement phase for the first cycle of our weatherization program, so I'll keep you posted on how that's working. But so far, it has not. It's not a barrier. But I had a question about the BPI certification and what your pass rate has been and what the assessment levels of the students in terms of their particularly their math performance. What's the threshold, and what's been your success with them passing that BPI certification?
Quite frankly, this is our first round of doing weatherization training in Kansas City, and
okay.
We haven't yet begun the training, so
we're
still in the recruitment phase.
Okay, I'll be interested in that, because we're hearing how difficult it is. Particularly for people who don't have a lot of experience. So,
okay, that's interesting to hear.
Yeah, well, I don't want to jinx you, but I'm interested in. I'll just be interested in how that's progressing because we're keeping an eye on it.
This is the installer certification. Is that correct? For the installer, or now BPI is they're still working this installer.
Working on the installer one.
Right.
Which one is this?
This would be weatherization technician.
Oh.
So this isn't for energy. It's for, I guess you're calling it installers. Does that mean the same, Mike?
Yeah, they have a weatherization. I think they've got several levels, and I think that this may be the answer to that of working with BPI in terms of the level of, it's kind of like the RRP at the level at which your training to,
mm-hmm.
whether it's one person on the site, in the case of RRP, or workers who may have less of a threshold. And I think we probably need to go to BPI and maybe talk to them about their different levels of certification because it's in their, they really want to make this work. Mostly they initially focused on the Northeast, which makes sense, the cold winter states, and moving west, and they want to see this work. In fact, North Carolina, I think, is in the process of mandating the BPI certification.
Warren, when do your classes start?
July 16th, and they run through, it's basically 4 weeks and 2 days of technical training. It's a combination of small contractors and job seekers that are going to be in the training. And then we have up to an additional about 2.5 weeks until September 3rd for people that feel like they need more hands-on experience that may, not have a whole lot of construction background.
Okay.
Just to make sure that they're prepared.
You know, getting back to that ex-offender issue, We do. There are programs that are focused on ex-offenders, and this is a good issue. The one you brought up is, if they're not going to change their standards, the question is how do you respond to those standards in it, similar to a dual-track program, or in another analogy might be a program where you have pregnant women or women who can't wear respirators or disabled people who can't wear respirators. What they do is they go through the training program and they start to branch off in the training program. And so there's a point at which you need to say, just as those who can't wear respirators or those may not physically fit for fit-up suits, you have two choices. You either don't let them in the program to begin with, or you let them in the program and then you branch off your program so that you have people that would have jobs that would not require that fit-up suit or respirator, or they can be ex-offenders. And so what it may require you to do to respond to the Kansas City issue, which is understandable, you may decide to bring everyone in, but then have those that have felony convictions say, well, this is why you can't go to in this particular area, but we've got some other areas that you could fit in very well. And it might be something in terms of asbestos removal, or it might be some field testing or, construction. Construction industry tends to be quite open to ex-offenders. They don't seem to be as much an issue, but going into people's homes and weatherization, that's another issue.
Well, it also depends on if it's new construction, whether the building's not inhabited, that's not a problem. And there's also the commercial side, which is a little bit more quarry friendly than the residential side of the weatherization.
So
slightly different skills, but.
So another approach is you run them through the program, but then when the placement becomes the issue, you don't run them through the retrofit, but you go to new construction.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a good point.
You would just have to stay away from that agency in terms of placement and then go to some other employer.
Yeah.
Right, or if they do commercial retrofits, then that's a little, that could be a little bit different. You just always have to ask.
Right. Yeah.
So listen, we don't want to trespass on our time. So in a couple of weeks, I think we'll talk more about this and bring it into the student recruitment arena and life skills. We're going to meet on the 2 weeks from now on the 26th and start talking about the students, and we can keep this up. And I'll write some post-session notes up, and anyone that wants to add to those and send them to the group can email everyone their comments.
Great.
I appreciate you all's time today, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello?
Bye.
Hello?
Yes.